Talk of Sports. Spoken here.
Right now, Adam Hoge, Jared Payton, Mark Carmen.
The beat is on.
You're 100% right.
This is The Beat on 720 WGN.
Happy Easter, everybody. Welcome into The Beat, 720 WGN. Adam Hoge, Mark Carmen with you. Mark Carmen is not happy. He is not having a good Easter.
Well, that's not necessarily true. I'm having a lovely Easter, but I am... I never want to be hot take sports radio guy or...
Hot takes!
Or angry sports radio guy, but I gotta...
What the heck is going on right there?
Mike Jacobson is instructing me to go a little bit lower on your mic.
Yeah, but what about right outside the window?
Oh, that. Well, I see a mascot. It's our new mascot for the show. Somebody is dressed up for Easter and looks good.
There is a... We are in the Allstate Showcase studio on Michigan Avenue, which means that during our radio show, we see weird things from time to time. And right now, that includes a fox that is dressed up in a fox suit. This is The Beat, and we are here till 6:30 today. A little extra bonus 30 minutes for you going into Blackhawks hockey. Nice win for the Hawks last night.
Big win.
They needed that.
Yes, they did.
The Bulls, however, did the opposite.
Yeah, so... I don't know if anybody actually watched the Bulls game last night. I'm guessing that nobody did. I did not watch it last night. I actually, had plans and was out and about, but I did, trying to be a prepared sports radio host. I got up this morning. I watched the Blackhawks from last night, and then I watched the Bulls game. And I did not know until about 9 o'clock this morning. I wonder if they came back and won the game because they were getting killed early. And then I saw they lost to the Orlando Magic. The Orlando Magic.
Yeah.
A terrible basketball team who had lost six games in a row and was without three of their best players in Victor Oladipo, Vujicic, and an Ilyasova, all not playing. And they
were on the second half of a back-to-back.
Right. And let's see. It was the second most points the Magic have scored all season, the second most they'd ever scored in the first half this year, 68. They had lost six in a row. The Magic had a 12-game streak of allowing over 100 points. The Bulls did not score 100 points. And all that, it's just one game in an 82-game season, and that's fine. But, so now the reality is that they are going to miss the playoffs. The Chicago...
Oh, yeah.
So, I think it's important to look at how do we get here, who is to blame, and how do you go forward, right? I think those are three things to kind of peer into.
That would make sense.
On this Easter Sunday.
Here's my question, though.
Go ahead.
Do you really think anything's going to happen?
Yes, something is going to happen.
But, okay, let me take that step forward. Does anything more than firing Gar Forman happen?
Yes. They're going to have to rework the roster. Okay, here.
You do that every year. That's not what I'm talking about.
But they don't. The Chicago Bulls do not. The Chicago Bulls went into last offseason. They had the 20th pick in the draft, 22, whatever, late first round pick. Bobby Portis fell to them. Fair enough. Book is out on that guy, by the way. Might be a rotational player, might not. Half the time he looks completely clueless, but I get that he's a rookie. That's fine. Whatever. You like Bobby Portis. The NBA, just here's a little lesson. Apparently the Bulls, for whatever reason, they just have not taken to heart. The NBA has changed. It is not about the old days of, let's go all the way back to Bill Russell, Wilt Chamberlain, or say the 90s when you had Hakeem Olajuwon and David Robinson, Patrick Ewing, even like functional centers like Rick Smits or Bill Cartwright, whoever you want to throw the ball into the post. It is not a center league. It is a perimeter league. You have to be able to guard the perimeter. The Chicago Bulls went into the season with Derrick Rose, who they knew was going to be on the court and off the court. If you were even projecting him to play 50 games, that would have been realistic. What did they do for a backup point guard? Kirk Heinrich can't play. Aaron Brooks can't play.
He's horrendous.
Right. What are you going to do with the rest of your perimeter? Well, we're going to have, let's think about this, Mike Dunleavy, who even if he had been healthy, certainly not a very good perimeter defender. Doug McDermott can't guard at all. Nikola Mirotic can't guard at all. And your center, many of the centers in the league right now are mobile. They can guard the pick and roll. Pau Gasol is horrendous at it. You had no one on the team that could guard the perimeter with the exception of Jimmy Butler and a little bit of Etuan Moore, which is why that guy started getting into the lineup, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what they've been asking Jimmy Butler to do for years now, and not giving him any help on the perimeter, Tony Snell, horrendous draft pick, which also, by the way, got Ron Adams, a very good defensive assistant coach, fired because he went
in. A lot of bad drafting.
Yeah. So you gave him zero help, and you said, hey, Jimmy, go guard the best player on the perimeter every night, which is insane in the NBA. Go guard LeBron James. And by the way, can you go and guard Kevin Durant? And then you
can you score 30?
And then go to the other end.
And you have to put up at least 30 every night.
And score.
And some nights we need you to put up 40.
Right. And this is your best asset, who, by the way, go guard Dwayne Wade.
And now he's not healthy. Surprise, surprise.
Right. Exactly. And you gave him and you did the same thing, by the way, with Luol Deng. Ran that guy into the ground, playing in 40 minutes. They have not.
And then almost killed him, literally.
Right. Right.
Which is a whole other separate issue with this organization.
Okay, so you're sitting there in the offseason. You've got Taj Gibson, who had 2 years left on his deal at that point, a very tradable part. You've got perimeter players all around the NBA. Nicholas Batum is a guy who's 6'7", long arms, who could help you take some pressure off Jimmy, be able so you can mix and match and actually guard teams. The Chicago Bulls can't guard anyone. We're not even getting into the chemistry and Fred Hoiberg versus Tom Thibodeau. Let's just look at the roster was so poorly created. And the other thing that happened.
Can I rewind a year?
Sure.
Because this goes back to what I was saying last year when they just ran Tom Thibodeau out of here. And everyone was like, oh, yeah, you got to do it. It doesn't get along with management. Well, and I've made this comparison so many times, but I still think it matters. The other team that's owned by Reinsdorf in this town. It was the exact same situation. The coach could not get along with management, and you had to choose.
Right.
And you look at their track record, and you chose the wrong person. I'm sorry. You chose the wrong person to fire. And it's the same thing here with the Bulls. All these issues, you could have said them last year, too. Now they're just a little bit more obvious. But all these roster problems were there a year ago.
No, there's no question. Here, when we come back here in a second, I want to get into what you just said, and also like the biggest mistake that Fred Hoiberg made as the Bulls head coach, and he made it on day one before he even had a practice. The Blackhawks weekend on WGN TV continues as the Hawks collide with Canucks. That's tonight in Vancouver. Hawks hockey tonight at 6:30 on WGN TV Sports, and of course you can hear the game here starting with the pregame at 6:30 as well. The biggest mistake that Fred Hoiberg made, he did it on day one. 7:20 WGN.
Holiday jumper, not that time. And game over, 111-89, the Orlando Magic, now 30-43 of the Bulls, now at 500, 36-36.
Obviously, what I'm saying right now, my message isn't getting across, and you know we're gonna sit in a room and hopefully get it figured out tomorrow.
Where do you think that disconnect is coming from? I know it's probably hard to pinpoint, but where do you think that disconnect is?
It's hard to say, Casey. I mean, they're locked in at shoot around. They're getting after it. They're paying attention to what we're doing, and then we go out there and get slapped in the face, and it just spirals downhill.
That's Fred Hoiberg, your Chicago Bulls head coach, courtesy of Comcast Sportsnet. Casey Johnson doing the questioning of your Chicago Tribune.
It was not Mark Trestman. It was Fred Hoiberg.
It might have been Mark Trestman. Or at least Fred Hoiberg channeling.
No, I actually think Fred is. I appreciate that Fred's being a little bit more blunt about the situation.
Yeah. Okay. I wish he had. I mean, like when I hear
instead
that,
instead of saying, "Oh yeah, our locker room's in a great place right now," he's
right. But he is saying they're locked in at shoot around.
That's the equivalent of we had a great week of practice.
Yeah, I don't think they are, Fred.
Probably not.
Here's Fred's first and biggest and huge mistake. Right. It was on media day this year, and I was out there, and I asked him the question about 6, 7, 8 in, and this is not trying to toot my own horn here, but I asked him the question. I said, are you thinking about bringing Joakim Noah off the bench? And his response was, I was expecting to get that question a little bit earlier. Because there had been rumors about that last season. And then he proceeds, we haven't made any decisions yet. But the truth of the matter is that they had made that decision. They were going to be an offensive team and Noah was going to come off the bench. Now, what you did by taking him out of the starting lineup, that is the heart and soul of your team, right? You're inserting Nikola Mirotic, who, from what I can tell in the offseason, maybe he shot some jump shots, but he certainly didn't get in the weight room, didn't get any stronger, can't guard the perimeter, had no business being in the starting lineup. And you're taking away a guy when Joakim's healthy. You know, we've talked about guarding the perimeter. Joakim Noah can jump out on a guard on a pick and roll, and he can cause some problems. He's long enough, he's quick enough, and you can't. And you have nobody else on the roster that can do that. And so you had this angry Noah, who everybody loves on the team, in one corner of that locker room, playing 20 minutes a night. You're getting shredded while he's off the court, at least a decent part of the time. And yeah, they started out the year better, and they were at one point, this was a 10-game over 500 team, but they still had like some of the defensive principles of Tibbs still like lurking in them, and then it just...
Like almost out of habit.
Yeah, and as the season goes along, it's just down. Taking Noah out of that starting lineup, it horrendous.
Well, and him getting hurt. I mean, they've obviously missed him.
Right. And
just missed his presence, even if it was coming off the bench. He was giving them some energy that just right now they don't have.
Right, and he should never have been coming off the bench. By the way, if you want to jump in, 312-981-7200, he's Adam Hoge. I'm Mark Harmon. We've got John Moon Mullen coming up at 3:35, a little Bears talk, because I know people are kind of like burnt on the Bulls, but we're leading with them today, because like you lose the last three games, two to the Knicks and one to the Magic, and you're out of the playoffs. I mean, come on, man. Come on. And you go to a Bulls game right now, seats aplenty around the old United Center. I mean, you could probably sit in the second row behind the Knicks bench if you're creative enough to get down there. So,
interesting.
Yeah. I mean, there's seats all over the place. I don't know anything about that, but there's...
You don't know anything about sitting two rows behind the Knicks bench?
No, well, maybe. But anyway, regardless, here's another thing. Let me give you... It's the middle of the season, okay? You've got Derek in and out of the lineup. You have more evidence. Let me give you a guy, not a household name. You need a backup point guard. I want to have the exact date here. On December, right at Christmas time, the New Orleans Pelicans traded a player by the name of Ish Smith, who's not a household name, but yet is a credible guard. They traded,
pretty sure you just made that name up.
Ish Smith to the Sixers for 2 second-round picks. Okay, Ish Smith, in the month...
Still not a real person.
Is a real person. In the month of January, for 2 second-round picks, point guard.
Okay.
15.5 points a game, 8 assists. February, 13 points a game, or I'm sorry, February, 15.5 and 8. January was he was 7-3, but then they actually needed him on the court. 15.5 and 8. Then 13-6. And now this month he's at 15 and 6 assists and 5 rebounds. They got him for 2 second-round picks. You're sitting there. What are you doing? You're cutting Kirk Heinrich to save money. You need a backup point guard. You have Derrick Rose. You don't know when he's going to play, and you can't operate like that. You have to have somebody behind him. How have you never gotten anyone behind him? How is that possible? Gar Foreman, you got to go. You really, he's got to go. And I don't know who's holding him back, how much of that is John and whatever.
Well, I don't think John can be taken out of the blame here.
No, he can't.
This tweet from Casey Johnson from the Chicago Tribune about an hour ago. The Bulls were a season-high 10 games over 500 on January 9th. They were 22-12. 22-12 on January 9th when they went to Atlanta. They lost that game to the Hawks. So including that game, that was sort of the start of the downhill spiral. They're 14-24 since. 14-24.
Right, and there's a lot of factors that have happened there. 574 is texting and get rid of Derrick Rose. Listen, if there's one thing that I'm actually confident in as far as next season is concerned, you can bank on a big year from Derrick Rose. It's his last season of his contract. He's going to be a free agent. He's worried about that money. His whole ego and everything is on the line. You're going to get a good year from Derrick Rose unless he gets hurt, something like that, out of his control.
What do you think? Yeah,
which very well could happen. But he's not.
What do you think he's worth right now in a trade?
Who knows?
Not much. I think, but
not much.
No, but I mean, I think
for 1 year.
Well, he's got a $21 million price tag. So to get anyone to take him, you're just going to get a bad contract back.
That's true.
I think you can move him, but you're not going to get value, and I think he's playing out that deal.
So you should probably just keep him on your roster.
Right. You're going to keep Derrick Rose. I think you're going to keep Jimmy. You're not going to sign Powell. But, you know, you got Taj Gibson, who you should have moved forever ago, and he's the only one doing anything, but you should have traded him a while ago. He's only got 1 year left on his contract, and he's a year older. He has less value. Any form of foresight would have been good. Just a drop. just a drop. 312-981-7200. Real quick, let's get... no, don't do that. Okay, Mike Jacobson,
We need to take a break, get to news. John Moon Mullen is going to join us on the other side of news. As, you know... Some significant things. Maybe not significant things happened this week with the Bears in Florida with the NFL owners meetings. There were some news items that we need to get to. And John Moon Mullen is the best. He's the godfather of the Bears beat. It's 720 WGM.
Fly me to the moon. Let me play among the stars.
What do you want? You want the moon? Just say the word and I'll throw a lasso around it and pull it down. Hey, that's a pretty good idea. I'll give you the moon, all right?
I'll take it.
Well, you hear that music. That means John Moon Mullen from CSN Chicago. Getting ready to join us here on the beat. Adam Hoke, Mark Carmen here with you till 6:30 today. An extra 30 minutes leading into Blackhawks hockey. Hawks in Vancouver tonight. Try to get a little bit of a Canadian sweep.
The great John McEnroe will be with us today at 5:35. Very excited to talk to Johnny Mac. And yes, huge night for the Blackhawks as they try to stave off becoming a wild card team. Did you and Moon hang out in Baton Rouge, in Boca Raton?
Yeah, he put up with the first half of the Wisconsin Xavier game with me. And then I think he decided he had enough.
Then he left you to go watch some tennis because he's the great Moon Mullen, and he was probably wanting to watch a BNP Paribas Open. Let's bring in the Moon. Moon, how was hanging out with Adam Hogue in sunny Florida? Did you guys go Speedo, combo, noon, swim? Hang on a second. Don't answer that. Now answer that, please. Thank you very much.
Yeah, there have been a couple of players. Remember Tony Parrish a few years back? To safety for the Bears?
Yes.
Love Tony Parrish.
Tony was probably, in the world of the ripped, they call Tony Sir. I did tell Tony Parrish one day, I said, Tony, first of all, I need your weightlifting program. And secondly, if I was built like you, I would only wear a Speedo the rest of my life. Which, again, put us again in the too much information part of the show. But I had to talk Hogan to at least covering up, you know, wearing something. I mean, we put a muumuu on or something, for God's sake, Adam.
Yeah, I know. I think I was creeping people out a little bit.
Moon, so many ways. We don't have time for that on the show.
Exactly. Moon, what did you kind of take away from the 3 days we had in Florida and some FaceTime with Ryan Pace, John Fox, and George McCaskey?
You know, Adam, I don't know if there was a single specific. I mean, I guess we could, you know, pull the camera back and say, well, they want to get faster on defense, but you could have wandered into the, you know, the Buffalo coaches and thing, and they would have said the same thing. There were so many little specifics, weren't there? I mean, whether it's a Matt Forte thing or it's a Martellus Bennett. I mean, those are kind of the I won't say hot buttons, but warm buttons, just because they were, you know, this off season for the Bears. But I guess one would just be. I had the feeling they feel really good, really good about the additions they've made. And I don't mean just what they said, but it was almost like the way they said it. You know, whether, you know, you saw they were talking about Akeem Hicks or Danny Trevathan or Jarrell Freeman. Bobby Massey. I think they feel that they really improved themselves, and I think they feel like they fixed four problem areas already. So to me, if you're grading, and I think you only can grade on a curve, you can't really say, are the Bears good or bad? To me, are they better or not? And I think they are. And then the second part would be, are they better vis-a-vis, you know, they've added four new guys. Meanwhile, the Lions are losing Calvin Johnson. The Packers are losing B.J. Raji. And, you know, so I think overall in the situation, I had a good sense, even on or off the microphones, that they felt pretty good about where they were. And, it wasn't for just the usual pablum for public consumption. So I guess that might be one was, again, I expect them to say how happy they were, but they were moving quickly, and I think they feel like they got their guys. And I don't know whether you and I talked about it, but the speed with which they did those deals, as I looked at it, you know, if you get a guy the first day of free agency, that's the guy you wanted. Well, a couple of those guys were. They did sign him the first day or two, meaning to me, I guess, you know, everybody says that's the guy we targeted. Well, you know, in this case, I tended to believe them because the speed, they didn't wait till a week or 2 weeks in and then now we're going to move on somebody. So I think they got him at the price they wanted, and they really did get guys in positions that they really wanted. So I guess that'd be the overall was pretty solid, I think, with those guys.
John Moon Mullen with us. Some people texting and calling you, saying they love the Green Bay Packers. I don't think you want to talk about that. But what I found interesting in one of your pieces, Moon, that you put out from Boca Raton, you said, quote, the abilities of Brandon Marshall and Martellus Bennett were never to question. Their priorities were whether football was a passion. And, you know, I'm not out covering the Bears every day like you guys were, but I am in the locker room some. And I did notice from time to time comments from Martellus where it's like, it seems like the grind of the game was something that he wasn't that into. Can you kind of elaborate on this passion thing you're talking about?
Yeah, and I think I'm not sure Adam would say the same. We saw that from, again, you don't want to have only say football is my life, but that's your job. And Bennett and Marshall, and I'm going to extend this out, take this outside of football a little, because I had this vague impression of Mark Grace once upon a time. Good players. The funny part was there was one Martellus Bennett and there was one Brandon Marshall when the camera lights were on, and there was another one when it wasn't in their best interest. It wasn't showtime.
Yeah.
And I frankly I felt when I would fill in doing some Cubs stuff, you know, I would be working on a story and I'd say, Mark, I'm doing a piece on Boone. Do you have a second? No. You know, if there weren't a lot of cameras, he really wasn't interested in talking to me. And again, not that that's quite the same thing, but I do think there were two Bennetts and there were two Marshalls. I mean, clearly Marshall, his priority was his next career. We got somebody else in the Bulls like that, don't we? I mean, don't you wonder what Derrick Rose's real basketball commitment is because of some of those things? Again, not to put them all in the same basket, but I think they want people, you know, be 100% in wherever you are. So I don't think Fox or Pace would have a problem if Brandon Marshall was a 200% committed when he was here. But there was always that feeling, and I think we sensed it around the Bears. Adam would speak to that, too. There was another agenda, and you could just feel it. And I always thought that with Bennett, who I liked. Bennett, you know, Martellus was a funny guy, bright guy. We did Comcast. We had him as the Bear of the Year at a banquet, and he was hilarious with kids and so forth. But I don't know. To me, he was looking at his movie. He was looking at his next thing. And while I really admire people who like that, who very bright bulbs, have much more on the ball than just football, but that's not what you want in the locker room. And I dare say I'm not sure that's what the Bulls want in their locker room. And I don't know that kind of lack of You never hear Derrick Rose talking about champ. You never hear the word championship out of his mouth, do you? Again, from what I see, I don't know that you ever heard that from Bennett or Marshall. And I think that's what John Fox and those guys are looking for.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing about Martellus over the last few years covering him, and you used the word admire, and I found myself admiring his other passions too at times, the artwork, the children's books and cartoons and all this stuff he's doing. There's some great stories if you kind of really pay attention to him going out in the community and surprising kids. There's a really good side to Martellus Bennett. It's just NFL teams don't want to hear that. You know, NFL teams, it's just a harsh business.
Football.
And it is. And that's not always fair. I mean, I certainly hope and I do believe that, you know, my bosses here at WGN want me to go out and think about other things and have other passions in my life, too. In the NFL, you got to be 100% committed to football. Mm-hmm. And if you're not, teams don't like that. And, you know, and they're going to move on from you.
I think, and if we look, as you're talking about it, Adam, I'm thinking back to some guys, and we can find them, think about them in football, Bears, or any other sport. The guy that immediately popped into my mind was Sean Gale. Very bright bulb, and Sean had children's books, had a lot of other stuff going. But he was different. The focus in Sean Gale, when you talk to Sean or we're, you know, in locker rooms, or again, not that that's the entire universe, because people can put on one face in public, another in private. But I think back, he just popped into my mind as you're describing him, Adam, describing the situation. Sean Gale was locked and loaded for football, and he still had other things outside. And there's guys who do that with their foundations and so forth. Matt Slauson or people like, but again, Gale comes to mind because he was in some respects very similar to Martellus Bennett. But there was no doubt Sean Gale was a Pro Bowl safety and, you know, I think one of the greatest single tacklers I've ever seen on the play for the Chicago Bears. His focus was here, and yet he compartmentalized. You know, when he was playing football, he was 100% here. When he was probably doing that, he did that kind of stuff. And that's what I think people do. That's not what they were getting from these two guys. And I think we probably both agree that you've definitely had that feeling from Martellus.
Yeah, Moon, wasn't it Brandon who would always say, football is my platform, not my purpose?
Perfect. Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. You're perfect. That couldn't have said it better.
And that's actually, you know, fine. I don't necessarily have a problem with that, but NFL teams want it to be your purpose. Mm-hmm. It needs to be your purpose. And by the way, I don't want to make it sound like the Bears made this decision all based on this. There are other issues at play here.
Right.
I think there were times when Martellus was acting more like a wide receiver in terms of, you know, that wide receiver kind of diva-ish mentality at times. There were outbursts in practice. There were other things that went into this. I just think when they added it up all together, they decided, okay, this guy just doesn't fit our program. He might fit somebody else's program, and quite frankly, I think he's going to fit in really well in New England and have a nice season in that offense, but it just wasn't going to work for these guys and what mm-hmm. they're trying to build right now, and they're showing patience in building it.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I do think it's going to work for him in New England, but the difference there is, they have achieved critical mass of football excellence. You would no more walk in there. Randy Moss, you know, whatever Randy was, whatever, and he goes up there and he fit right in. I mean, a guy who could be temperamental. You are so not going to turn that aircraft carrier off the Tom Brady, Bill Belichick. He's not there anymore, but guys like Vince Wilfork. I mean, there are guys in that program. The Bears don't quite have that yet. You know, they have their, you were talking about team leadership. But they're kind of the bell cows that everybody follows. And Pernell McPhee is one of those. Kyle Long is one of those. But they don't have quite the – they're not vetted the way some of those guys are. I do think I think these guys are very bright bulbs. I mean, Martellus Bennett's not going to get his butt cut by going up there and starting to tell Tom Brady he needs to, you know, throw me the damn ball when he's got, you know, Gronk and whatever else is up there. I do think he's going to sublimate a little bit of himself to, I think the best thing he can do for his contract demands is win a Super Bowl. Everybody gets a little pixie dust. So I think he's smart enough to know that. So in Chicago, they didn't have that critical mass of leadership and focus. I think it's coming, but I don't think it's there like it is in New England.
Hey, Moon, before you go, what do the Bears have against China? I mean, the NFL is going to play in China in 2018. The Bears are, I mean, is it Shanghai? I mean, what's the problem that they're unwilling to go over there?
Well,
it's a beautiful country, Moon.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how they're going to do that. I mean, you're talking. It was disruptive enough to go to London, and there's going to be three games over there. I just wonder whether the smartest thing isn't to make that. You know, give the team that plays in China an extra bye week, and you begin or end the season there or something. this isn't just like going to Cleveland. This is, you're losing a day. I don't know how they're going to schedule it. I think this is so monumentally disruptive. I wouldn't want to be on the darn thing. Adam, you want to go to China?
Yes.
I wouldn't mind going as a reporter, but you bring up a good point. Like, logistically, is this...
Oh, man.
Moon.
Like, you might have this might have to be like the season opening game.
Exactly.
And then give both teams a bye week right away, right after that.
Yes,
but then
exactly. They're
talking about playing 15 games in a row after that. So it's like, no matter how you do it with the schedule, it's going to be hard not to put those teams at a disadvantage.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly what I was kind of saying is whoever's going to China, that's your first game, meaning you can go there 2 weeks ahead. Finish you do your fourth preseason game, if they're still playing for it, whenever this happens, and take your time, get acclimated. I mean, you know how teams travel with more than just, you got to have your practice equipment. Well, you don't need that stuff if you're going to play in Kansas City. But if you're going to China, you're going to be using days to get there out of your week. They're not going to be taking their blocking sleds out there. I don't know how they're going to do that. And so, if you know, when George McCaskey, and he wasn't alone. I love John Fox's comment. Hey, we can't even get paid officials. We're going to China. I mean, that was perfect. I'm not sure he meant that for on the record, but hey, that's exactly how I think I'd feel if I was a coach.
Moon, appreciate the time as always. We will talk to you soon, sir.
Okay, guys. Be well. Talk soon.
John Moon Mullen, Comcast Sportsnet, all-time great guy, all-time Bears reporter, joining us on 720 WGN. We have to take a quick time out, Adam, but when I come back, or when we come back, thank you, I think we're doing
something. Am I coming back?
Yes, you are. I'm still coming back? I said because I have a question for you
about
an area of need the Bears have not addressed. Can we do that next?
Bears.
720 WGN.
Things do change. One thing that's constant is there is change. But I don't anticipate changes, but they could happen.
That's my favorite.
Can we wait?
Fox quote of the year.
I need that one more time. Can we get that one more time? Is that logistically possible? I want to just try to, before we hear it again, I want to try to say, like, let's play the telephone game with that one.
Try to understand what he said?
I'm not into change, but things change. Nothing changes. Nothing stays the same, so there's always change. There will be change.
Things do change. One thing that's constant is there is change. But I don't anticipate changes, but they could happen.
So he says the one thing that is constant is change. I don't anticipate changes.
That's John Fox, by the way, your Chicago Bears head coach. This is the Beat 720 WGN.
That's just an all-timer.
I need it one more time. Wait, things change. That's one thing that always happens is there is change, but I don't anticipate change, but there could be change?
Things do change. One thing that's constant is there is change. But I don't anticipate changes, but they could happen.
It's the best.
How do you deal with that guy? And I'm not saying he's not a good coach, and I'm not saying even what he says to the media matters, but like, there is some form of integrity. Like, you have a relationship with the guy. You're a reporter. He's the head coach. You guys, when the microphones are not on, you kind of look into each other's eyes and try to build some form of rapport, and then he's just saying stuff like whatever that was.
And that's how it goes. He's actually a decent guy to talk to when we're not actually having trying to get a quote for the radio or the newspaper or whatever, and he's just not going to give it to you.
And I get it, doesn't matter, but like, and we romance the past, but give me Mike Ditka all day long.
Oh God!
I mean, just give me for pure sound bites. My God! I mean, since Ditka, Wonstadt, awful, Dick Duran, awful, Lovey, beyond awful, Tressman, death, and then Fox. Am I missing anyone?
Shut up.
No, that is it right there. But really, come on. You're just not going to get coaches like that. You got Mike Ditka and Ozzie Guillen. Who else?
At least Tibbs was at least entertaining.
Oh, come on.
How about Joe Maddon?
He's about to win the World Series. But he's good in a different way in that
he's actually giving you a real person legitimate
stuff.
We got to get to news. Coming back here, I will answer the Bears question that I have, and then we'll move on from the great football team that is going to go 8-8 next year, 720 WGN.
You know, it's all a problem.
Bees! Bees! Bees in the car! Bees everywhere! God, they're huge! They're ripping my flesh off!
Son, roll around! Do you hear me? Roll around on the ground!
Forget that! I'm starting to swell up!
Save yourself! Don't be the hero!
Frank, I'm allergic to bees. Me too.
They're huge and they sting crazy.
We'll come back later and check on you.
Get a walk. Save yourself.
Your firearms are useless against them.
I love Chris Farley.
I love bees. No, I don't. What did I just say? I love Tommy Boy. I love Mike Jacobson. I love Adam Hogue. If you're just joining us, there is a Cubs are having a bee epidemic. Spring training is going on. Cubs are getting killed.
The bees are winning.
7-1. And now the game is delayed because of bees.
By the way, it was reports now saying Dexter Fowler left the game with tightness. Tightness in his left side.
Who's got tightness?
Dexter Fowler.
Uh-oh.
Tightness. Left side.
I was listening to the bees. I'm sorry.
So it wasn't a bee sting.
Was not a bee sting.
Okay.
Considered mild, according to at Kerry Muscat.
Tremendous Cubs reporter, been doing it for years. The good news today was that Jake Arrieta has been cleared for opening day. The blister is apparently dissipated to the point that there is no problem, like Arrieta said there wouldn't be. And Joe Maddon is fired up for Arrieta on opening day. Go Cubs, go. This is the year. We talked about this yesterday. They're winning the World Series.
There's a video of Jason Hayward in the outfield, like, swatting the bees away. Like, he's getting attacked by the bees, just
see,
like Chris Farley.
I would advise against that. That just angers them.
One of the most
you can't do that.
Hayward was in left where the bee issue started, and he moved over to center. And Fowler left the game with this side issue, and whoever they put out and left, I think it was Matt Caesar, had to deal with it. That's a veteran move, but that's not veteran leadership by Jason Hayward.
Well, there's video. Hayward just like sort of says, "Ah, screw this," and he runs to the wall to get away from the bees.
I mean, that's what I would do.
I hate bees. First of all, I would have ran off the field the second they were by me. Bees are the worst.
Have you ever been stung?
Yes, and my hand blew up like a balloon. I got stung on my left hand before a Wisconsin Badger game in college. I was grilling some brats or something. And I'm like, didn't think much of it. You know, went to the game. You know, kind of whatever. Next day I wake up. My hand was like a club. It just blew up. And it was like that for a week. And it just itched like crazy. I'm never getting stung by a bee again.
I would have gone to the hospital. The one time I got stung by a bee, I was 8, 9 years old. I was at the Highland Park train station. I had some like candy, sugary thing. And I was holding it by my mouth. The bee stung me in the middle of my neck. I, of course, was a young kind of soft Mark Harmon, started crying hysterically in the train station. Nobody was around. I think I was just like wandering, back in the day when you could do those type of things. I walk home. It's a significant walk home. By the time I got halfway home, I had calmed down and I was fine. Then I walked in the door, saw Mom and Dad, and just started bawling. I got stung by a bee. And forever, forever traumatized for the rest of my life, Adam. And that's what this is bringing up for me right now. Thinking about my childhood bee sting.
Young soft Mark Harmon.
Being by myself in
the train. As opposed to old soft Mark Harmon.
Apparently fans are sitting there under blankets. They're trying to hang in there.
I'm so glad I'm not there right now. I would be freaking out. I'm not even kidding. Not good.
You know what? You know why they're having these bee issues? Okay, I'm stretching. But like literally every baseball team now, you can't just go to a baseball game anymore and have a hot dog and peanuts and Cracker Jacks and a beer. Every single place has got to have some elaborate food item, which is just, in my mind, un-American. Like, in Atlanta, they've got the Punisher, smoked rib meat with a onion ring and a salsa and a Canadian bacon. Like, who goes to...
That sounds amazing.
Yeah, but, like, you're trusting a ballpark, which is just filled with disgusting... rats running around in there and people that are making not enough, a lot
you need to get out of Wrigley more.
So how does the Punisher bring in more bees?
Because
it's bacon.
It's more product, Jacobson. There's more rando product.
Right, because there hasn't been cotton candy and ice cream and super ropes and all this stuff. That hasn't been there. Cracker Jacks forever.
Well, but the bees just got used to that and are like not interested anymore, and they left.
They got tired of the Cracker Jacks.
Yes, but now
now they want the Punisher.
I mean, the tater top chop. I mean, you got a tater top. What is this thing? It's the it's a $16 sandwich. Who goes to a ballpark and buys a $16 sandwich of tater tops pressed in a waffle iron along with bacon, cheese?
You know what they sell at Target Field in Minnesota?
They've got like a
you can get an enormous Bloody Mary.
Well, okay, drinking is good,
but you know how normally a Bloody Mary comes with like, you know, a sausage stick or a cheese stick, or you know, this one literally has a hamburger on top of it.
Yeah, that right.
Like, there's a spear that goes in your Bloody Mary, and there's a burger on top. This thing costs, I think it costs
$20. That sounds
good. You get a giant Bloody Mary with a burger.
Okay, I could see that. Like, a burger, it's a long time, ballpark food, fine. Want to throw it on some alcohol? Great. Atlanta's got the burger pizza, pepperoni pizza, with a burger underneath it, and then another slab of dough underneath that, which I guess that is fine too. But like when you get all these, like if you go to a San Francisco Giants game, they got like an ahi tuna poke sashimi reduction balsamic vinaigrette with a side of ranch. Like who goes to the ballpark and gets that? You're going to the ballpark.
I think have the White Sox announced their like taste testing thing yet?
No, you go right. You go to White Sox.
We should do that as a show.
You go to U.S. Cellular Field. You know what you get? You get a grilled hot dog with grilled onions and mustard, or you get a grilled brat. That's it. This is not. We don't need to go all crazy here.
But they have crazy stuff there.
They do.
They had bacon on a stick last year.
Well, bacon on a stick, fine. It's bacon and it's on a stick, great. But when you get into the whole,
what about the Hellman nachos?
Hellman nachos, great. Great, great ballpark item. Red wine reduction tartare in the left field corner. It's unbelievable that somebody would willingly go and buy that there. How could that possibly be good?
I had barbecue chicken mac and cheese in Arizona at the White Sox game.
Generally fine. You got chicken, you got a little barbecue, you got a mac and cheese.
In a little helmet.
That's fine.
That I gave to my son.
That's fine.
Helmet bowl.
How about the... I mean, and even at Wrigley,
great purchase.
At Wrigley, you were going to want to bring in hot dogs and sell a quail dog or whatever. Okay, fine. But like...
A quail?
Do you not...
I don't even know what a quail is.
Does anybody know what I'm talking about? Apparently, I just think it's just bizarre. We don't have to raise the bar on everything.
I think you took a couple bees in Arizona that aren't really harming anybody, and you blew it up into a bigger issue.
Yes, it resonated because there's got to be a reason for the bees, and I'm going to go with that there's different food out there that has caused. Like somebody brought something out to those left field bleachers that shouldn't have been there.
Mark Carmen, make a ballpark eating great again.
312-981-7200. Who longs for the old days of just a hot dog, mustard? That's it. Done. I mean, back in the day, I mean, I sold.
You know what you sound like right now? You sound like one of those angry old white dudes that complain about bat flips.
No, it's...
That's what you sound like. When I went to the ballpark, all we had was hot dogs.
Different animal. Different animal. But kind of the same. It's a very well played right there. Good job.
Stop bringing all these bees to the game.
With Chicago Tribune Sports Plus, you can relive the best moments of the game anytime you want. Start your 30-day trial at chicagotribune.com/sportsplus. Joey Meyer of WGN, a former head coach of DePaul, of course, doing Northwestern alongside Dave Ennett, will be with us at 4:35. So we'll get to him and
Are you ever going to ask me that Bears question you've been teasing for an hour and a half?
I apologize. I got the bees sidetracked the show. Thank you. I blame it on the bees. We'll do that next. Matt Forte, who's going to replace him? Adam Hogue, 720 WGN.
You know, happy. I was thanking the fans and stuff. You know, I wasn't able to get everybody, but I was able to slap a few hands and, you know, tell everybody thank you or whatever, just because if this was, you know, the last game or whatever that I play in Soldier Field, yeah, I didn't want to leave without, you know, telling the fans I appreciate them and stuff in person.
There he is, Matt Forte, 720 WGN The Beat, Adam Hoge, and yours truly, Mark Carman, here till 6:30 tonight.
I got a quick update on the B situation.
Okay.
The Cubs have actually moved bullpens. They're now sharing the right field bullpen with the Mariners because of the Bs.
That's the proactive nature of Joe Maddon and company that I like to see. Guys are in danger. We got to go out. We got to share a bullpen.
Got to protect the team.
Now bonding with the Mariners. It's a big time move.
Now, do you think the B situation changes the World Series situation?
No, I think we're good. I'm not going to go that tall, but I think that is a legitimate question. Here's another question so we can actually finally pay off this long-running tease. So when the Bears, because we had Moon Mullen on a little while ago, and he's
like 3 hours ago.
Right, he mentioned Akeem Hicks and Bobby Massey and Jarrell Freeman and Danny Trevathan, all these guys that the Bears have brought in. And yes, Martellus is gone, and so is Matt Forte. And I thought when Matt Forte left that it was going to be Jeremy Lankford and Kadeem Carey, and I didn't think they were going to be looking at a running back. But then they were hot after C.J. Anderson, who they ended up not getting. And now it seems like they want to bring in another running back to at least take some of the load off. So I'm wondering, Adam Hoge, since you've been down in Boca Raton around the NFL owners' meetings talking to Bears officials, I mean, what's your take on the running back situation here?
Well, I actually thought that both Ryan Pace and John Fox had legitimate answers to this question, which was one of the biggest things I was wondering going down there. Hey, explain to me why you let Matt Forte go if you offered C.J. Anderson $19 million. Yes, he's 5 years younger. He's also a lot worse. Not that C.J. Anderson's a bad player, but he's not Matt Forte, at least not in my opinion. Matt Forte is a better running back, better receiver, can do it all. Okay. Now, here is the explanation from Ryan Pace first, and I thought this actually made a lot of sense because it is how this thing went down. C.J. Anderson had was a restricted free agent, and the Broncos were expected to put a second-round tender on him, which means that if you want to sign him, you have to give up a second-round pick to do it.
Yeah.
And no one's going to do that. I mean, the Bears weren't going to give up a second-round pick for C.J. Anderson. That's like a trade. You're not going to do that. But they didn't. The Broncos didn't put that second-round tender on him. So suddenly, C.J. Anderson became way more available than anyone thought, including the Bears, when they let Matt Forte go.
Okay, so they just saw a good player out there, and they thought there was some value there, so they got excited.
Yeah, it's important to remember the timeline here and understand that when the Bears made the decision to let Matt Forte go, they never thought C.J. Anderson was going to be an option. Suddenly, he becomes an option. They get in the bidding war. They're willing to offer him the most money. Ultimately, Anderson chose Miami, and Denver matched. By the way, side note, the Broncos ended up paying him a lot more money than if they had put the second-round tender on him. It probably cost them an extra $3 million or so, $2 or $3 million per season.
So what you're saying is that...
So that was a kind of a screw-up by John Elway.
I don't get that by John Elway at all. That doesn't seem to make sense. What you're saying is that they're not actually looking for a running back, but they were willing to look at one because a very good one became available. They were interested, but you don't anticipate them doing anything else there.
Well, that's not necessarily what I'm saying. I see a scenario where they draft a running back for sure. I definitely think that if they have 9 draft picks, I think they draft another running back. But another thing to keep in mind here, and something that both Ryan Pace and John Fox talked about this week, part of their philosophy in free agency, and we have seen this, to help minimize risk, because any free agent you sign is risky. You don't always know those players. You don't know their intimate medical histories and whatever. I mean, you certainly give them a physical, but you don't know every little detail, like when the guy's in your building. And they're signing guys that they're familiar with. That is something we've seen here. Guys that either Pace had in New Orleans or Fox had in Denver. C.J. Anderson's one of those guys that John Fox knew well.
Yep. Let's get 312-981-7200. You want to talk Bears? Dave in Iowa on 720 WGN. Dave, go ahead.
Hey, this is Dan from Iowa.
Oh, Dan.
How's it going?
Hello, Dan.
Yep. Okay, I got one question, Adam. I know everybody likes DeForest Buckner out of Oregon, but I don't think he's going to be there at number 11. But what would it cost the Bears if he's there at number 8 and they call Philadelphia on a trade to trade up to maybe get him and head up with Tampa Bay? What would that cost the Bears?
Thank you, Dave.
Well, it would cost them at least, you know, probably your second-round pick and more than more than that, maybe even, I mean, three spots. It's not like you're moving up to the top five, but it's going to cost you a lot. So you better believe that you really like that guy. I mean, you're talking about a second, probably, you know, a fourth too, maybe a pick a year from now too. So now it's going to cost you a lot, but I think DeForest Buckner is going to be a really good player. And I also have Dan kind of agree with you. I don't know that he's going to be there at number 11.
Going to have a ton of draft coverage, by the way, on leading up to the April 28th NFL draft. Adam, of course, has been all over it for years. We'll be doing a ton of stuff around that. And yeah, we'll perhaps get into a drop more of that today. But Joey Meyer up after the 4:30 news talking NCAA tournament, a Final Four preview, 720 WGN. WGN. They're coming up in a matter of moments at the United Center, Syracuse and Virginia, and then later tonight, Notre Dame, North Carolina. We've got two have punched their ticket, the Final Four in Houston. The Villanova Wildcats are headed there, as are the Oklahoma Sooners.
Does it actually make you punch a ticket, like after you win the game?
Did that fall under your cliche thing yesterday that you say not to do? Don't.
No cliches.
Punch their ticket. They have advanced. They will be playing in whatever. Joey Meyer, the outstanding color commentator alongside Dave Bennett for Northwestern basketball, former head coach, joining Adam Hogue and yours truly, Mark Harmon, on 720 WGN. Joey, good afternoon. Can you pronounce Villanova's best player? Because I can't, and nor can I spell. I can spell it, I guess, because I'm looking at it.
Archie Diacono.
You just said it right. Yep. What's the problem? It's Archie. If you have problems, you just call him Archie. I'm sure in Philly and around the campus, he doesn't have a last name. It's Archie.
He's a born and bred Villanova kid. I think his father played there. He loves the university. Was in tears last night as Villanova was finishing off Kansas. Joey, were you surprised at the ending of that game that Nova, I mean, really was in control of that game for most of the time?
Well, Kansas made a great run in the beginning second half, and then Villanova hit two gigantic three-point shots, to take the lead. And I thought that was obviously the turning point in the game. Villanova was a little bit of trouble. They drained. Archie hit one, and I think Jenkins, I'm not sure who hit the other one, but they had two big threes that I thought really turned around the game. Villanova was really good defensively, and I always thought teams that switch defenses a lot usually aren't great defensive teams, that you don't work on one thing primarily, so you never get great at anything. They just play so hard. I've been impressed with how hard they play and how much they compete.
Villanova coached by Jay Wright, and he, you know, back in 2009, he kind of burst on the scene. All of a sudden, you know, everyone's talking about Jay Wright as the hottest young coach, and he could go to Kentucky, and he decides to stay at Nova. And then they had some tough times, and now he's got them back in the Final Four. Like, when, just going back, Joey, and a lot of people, they yell at coaches for bouncing around. People in this town still are mad at Bill Self for leaving Illinois and going to Kansas, even though, you know, it's Kansas. I mean, did you think Jay was making the right decision at that point?
Well, you never know what's going through a person's head. Family has something to do with it. Obviously, Villanova, what's that line, ponied up. You know, when they want somebody, they some way find money. But I tell you this, he is definitely the best dressed coach.
Yep.
And you know, that man is impeccable. And you know what's surprising? Usually when you see, what's your first thought? Pretty boy, that team plays as hard and as competitive as anybody in the tournament, probably harder than anybody. He can coach. He can just flat out. Now, I'm a little pressured. I really like him and know him, but he can flat out coach. And obviously it turned out to be a great decision for him. Sometimes what's that line about one step ahead of the posse? Sometimes we see guys move because they think they're not stable in their position. Obviously, he felt he was stable, and his family, they loved Billy, and boy, it turned out to be the right decision.
Joey, speaking of Jay Wright's suits, why do coaches wear suits? It seems like it's just not comfortable with all the jumping and screaming and all the moving they do in a game.
I'm with you all the way on that one. I'm in the minority. When we were in the D-League, when I first got to the D-League, we just wore polo shirts and vests or whatever. It made sense to me. I don't understand. I mean, he looks great. Don't get me wrong. But I don't know why you're coaching. You're not – I mean, football coaches, I guess some of them wear suits. I don't see many, but yeah, I don't know. I don't understand the theory behind that. You sweat through it, and then if you get lucky enough to win, they douse you in water and ruin the suit anyway.
Yeah, but what's your theory, Joey, about a coach, forget about the whole what they're wearing, but just having to have a seatbelt and sit down? Because in college, it's like they're playing the game themselves. Sean Miller of Arizona is sweating more than everybody on the court combined. And I kind of wonder, like, if I'm a player, my coach is going that crazy over there, how can I relax and just play? Am I off base here?
You're always off base. You're just off base again.
Come on, coach.
What happens in practice? That some coaches are very and coach every play. Some aren't. Roy Williams isn't up on every play. Some coaches are of course he's got two bad knees, but you coach the game the way you coach practice a lot of times. And some coaches coach so hard in practice that they kind of sit down and say, all right, you've already gone through all of this before. And then there's the coaches that are very vocal. It's really how players respond to you. They know what's going to happen. They get used to it. There's communication back and forth. I don't have any problem in coaching either way, to be honest with you. I mean, sometimes you think maybe coaches are a little showy sometimes, but it's hard to sit down. I did this for 30-some years. It's hard. You're anxious. You're nervous. I like the rule they keep all the assistants down. Having the head coach up, I really don't have a problem with it.
He's Joey Meyer, the radio analyst for Northwestern basketball right here on 720 WGN. You know, Joey, the NCAA tournament can be very unpredictable, and sometimes I feel like it's just smart to ride the best player. And Buddy Hield is just really good for Oklahoma.
He's tremendous. I mean, how can you not be impressed by what he's done? His range on his shot, it's not Steph Curry, but it is deep. And how quick he gets it off, he's got that great step back move going to his left. Although if I was coaching against him, I'm making him go right because he doesn't shoot as well going right. He'll take it to the basket. But the way he shoots threes, I'd rather have him going to the basket. He's been great. But I tell you, the underrated players are really Isaiah Cousins and Jordan Woodward. Those two guards are really good. They take away all his ball handling responsibility. He can just come off screen. Those three guards are the best guard combination in the NCAA tournament. And that would be very, very hard to beat.
You had some great wins back in the day over Notre Dame, Joey, and the Irish playing for a chance to go to the Final Four tonight against North Carolina. I think Carolina has been the best team in the tournament. I think it's hard to argue against that. Do you give Notre Dame a fighting chance tonight, or is it Carolina by 10?
Here's the way I look at this. I mean, they got drilled big time last time. If it's a five-game series, there's no doubt, but there's pretty good probability that North Carolina's a win. Scenario for Notre Dame, North Carolina's got to be a little off their game. You know, those threes that Page hit early, they don't make them. You know, big fella Bryce Johnson gets in foul trouble. I think they have to be off their game, and I think Notre Dame has to be on their game. If both play well, North Carolina's going to win. If both play shaky, North Carolina's going to win. It's going to take a special game for Notre Dame to win, and that's what makes the NCAA tournament so much fun. It can happen. You know, it can happen for them. Astoria, he's got to hit some threes. You know, I mean, he's got to step up a little bit. Jackson can't go and miss all the shots he missed early. They just have to have a special night to do it. But North Carolina, I agree, is the best team playing the best right now. But I tell you, they have no cakewalk. I mean, Virginia, if they do win like expected, and Oklahoma, Villanova, those aren't easy. Those aren't easy outs.
Well, I'll tell you what, Notre Dame's got to shoot a lot better than they did against Wisconsin the other night. I mean, Wisconsin was up 9. Really, I thought had a chance to bury Notre Dame there. And Nigel Hayes, Bronson Canaan weren't really shooting that well, kind of kept Notre Dame in the game. That allowed them to be there and make the big run they did in the final seconds, which you got to give the Irish credit for. But, I mean, if they shoot the way they did against Wisconsin Friday night in the first, I don't know, 30 minutes of the game, North Carolina's going to be running away with this game.
Yeah, that was a hard game to watch.
they beat him by
the first half. Oh, my goodness. I think, you know, they have rebounding rims they put over the basket for practice.
Yeah.
So you can't make a shot. I think they had one on both ends of the floor. It was a tough one to watch. But give Notre Dame credit. I mean, they have some luck. I mean, to get that steal, Stephen F. often had them beat.
Yeah.
But they have some resiliency. And how about Mike Bray? I've always said he is not appreciated enough down at Notre Dame. I go down to games, you know, they introduce the coach, and usually there's either mumblings or there's a cheer. It's kind of quiet. I'm like, fans, you don't understand how good a coach this man is. They don't appreciate enough to go back to back Elite Eights to get there this year. That's incredible because they're not on paper as good as the other teams in this final eight, and yet they've done a tremendous job. He has great spacing. He's a great offensive coach, and they've really been competitive defensively, and I think that's what's made them take the next step to be able to get this far.
Hey, speaking of coaches that maybe weren't as appreciated in their at their schools, they maybe should have been, but Jamie Dixon leaves Pitt, goes to TCU. All of a sudden today, Kevin Stallings going from Vandy to Pitt, and it seems like maybe the Panthers fans are not happy with how the whole thing ended up working out. What was your reaction to how that whole scenario played out?
Well, you know, you could hear rumblings at both schools, you know, and if you looked at Jamie Dixon's record, boy, it's hard to say he should have had any rumblings there.
Right.
But sometimes when you're at a place a long time, you know, people get tired of what you're doing. You know, if you're winning, which I thought he was, but you're not playing fast enough, or you're not doing this enough, and you're not getting the name. You know, so something comes up after a long period of time. Very few coaches left. The Ray Myers of the world, you know, as I put an S on that, Ray Meyer of the world. But, you know, this don't happen that often. You don't think Mike Krzyzewski, how many Mike? It's just not the way it is in the world. It's what have you done for me lately? And obviously this fan base wasn't pleased. But you know, I look at that record and I say, you should be happy with what you got.
Joey Meyer with us here on 720 WGN for a couple more minutes. Joey, we got tip-off at the UC in a matter of moments here. Virginia and Syracuse. By the way, if you're in the neighborhood, tickets are going for $10 on StubHub for tonight's game. If you want, you're willing to sit in the upper corner. Who do you like tonight? It bothers me that a team that shouldn't have been in the tournament now, I guess, has proven themselves getting all the way to the Elite Eight. But Syracuse has not played anyone the size of Virginia, so I'm guessing you like the Cavalier.
Yeah, I watched the first game they played. Virginia really does a great job of attacking the zone. And talk about good coaches, Tony Bennett. How good a coach is he? But they really move the ball. They have great spacing. They have shooters, but they love to get it inside, high to low, low to high. They attack that zone really well, and they are so good defensively. I would say the one thing about Syracuse is they're bad shot makers. But then, I mean, they chat you go, oh, no, oh, nice shot. You know, I mean, as a coach, they can make bad shots. If you put it on paper, there's no doubt in my mind it's a Virginia win. Defensively, offensively, they have the advantage. But some teams, you know, you get on it. We went to the Final Four playing the 2-3 zone a lot and didn't have any depth and didn't have this. But you get on a roll, you start believing in yourself. So I give them a shooter's chance, Virginia. But I would bank on Virginia winning this game.
Joey Meyer, great stuff. Always love talking basketball with you.
I enjoyed it, and you know where I'll be sitting, right in front of the TV set. Watch both games.
Coach, we're coming over after the show. We like a deep dish Lou Malnati's look. I like the Lou with the spinach and the tomatoes. If you can get that going on, we'd really appreciate it.
You know, like I said before, you're never very accurate, and you're inaccurate again there. So you can forget about that. But I'm going to go back, and I got about 10 nieces and nephews that are about under the age of 5, and they're going crazy. I'm going to go out there and make them wilder.
That's a beautiful visual right there. Joey, you're the best. Take care.
All right, man. Thanks, guys.
Joey Meyer with us at 720 WG. I love Joey.
It's good stuff.
Joey's my – you
breaking it down.
You feeling an upset, Syracuse, Virginia?
No.
No, you're fine.
Virginia, North Carolina, Final Four.
Fair enough. I got a Final Four tip for you coming back here. No,
really?
No, your Final Four, 720 WGN.
Now we know.
And knowing is half the battle.
...720 WGN, this is The Beat. With you till 6:30 tonight. Blackhawks and the Vancouver Canucks. Judd Surratt warming up in the bullpen. John Weidemann, Troy Murray from Vancouver as the Hawks look for their second win in a row after beating Calgary last night 4-1. Adam Ho, what do you know about Buddy Hield?
I know he's a very good player who whooped Wisconsin's butt earlier this season.
Do you know where he grew up? Do you know that he comes straight out of the Bahamas for you? Do you know he's got a
No.
Do you know he's got a Bohemian accent?
I did not know that.
Do you know that he's the main guy you should be focused on in this Final Four?
Yes.
I mean, the guy's coming from the Bahamas. That doesn't happen every single day. Can you name other people that have, like, a Buddy Hield slant to them?
Like, from the Bahamas?
Yeah, or if, like, from the islands. We'll expand it out a little bit. Do you remember, like, a Tim Duncan at Wake Forest? Coming straight for the Virgin Islands.
Okay, yeah.
See? I mean, that's the type of level. I don't think you can draw a direct line from Buddy Hield to Tim Duncan, but it's rare that
I wasn't going there.
Yeah. The guy had 37.
He's got and Joey Meyer was just talking about this. His shot is unbelievably pretty. He's got this, like, little step back. It's, like, fade away, but it just falls right through the net. Great release. He's really fun to watch.
Everything about, like, the Final Four on that side of the bracket to me is Buddy Hield. And if you didn't pick Oklahoma, then you just weren't thinking clearly, because you always should pick the...
I had Oklahoma in the Final Four.
My man. Give me a little fist bump.
I had them losing to Kansas, though, which is what I regret.
Yeah.
Because like I just said to Joey Meyer, sometimes you just got to ride the best player in the tournament. To me, that's Buddy Hield.
Let me give you one more Buddy Hield trivia. Okay. Buddy Hield is averaging this year 25.4 points per game.
Yes.
For your Oklahoma Sooners. The most compelling guy in the Final Four. This is the first time since who in 1990 that a score averaging 25 a game made it to the final weekend. Now, 1990, this guy played for the rambling wreck of Georgia Tech, and he could shoot the lights out. He's now on NBA TV, and he spent a bunch of time alongside Shaquille O'Neal, and his nickname was 3D. And if you can't get it now, I can't help you. Jacobson, you know what I'm talking about? Am I like just this
3D.
Old
3D?
Dennis Scott,
my man.
Oh. Yeah, I don't feel bad about that one at all.
Buddy Hield, the first guy to get to the Final Four since 1990, averaging 25 or more since Dennis Scott. I think they should bring back Did You Know? Like, do you remember Did You Know on a nice Sports Center, the end of Sports Center, you get a Did You Know?
Oh, yeah. They don't do that anymore?
Did You Know is like long gone.
I don't watch Sports Center.
Why does nobody, and then that's the other take nowadays, nobody watches SportsCenter.
It's not just a take, it's a factual
thing
that ratings are going down on highlight shows.
Yeah, right, because we can get all our stuff a lot sooner and we all live on the internet.
And also it's just turned into most of ESPN's programming right now. It's just people yelling at each other.
I'm in the minority.
You and me.
we don't know who... Can you tell me the name of the best player on Villanova, too, before we move on?
The best player?
Yes.
Archie Diacono?
Ryan Archie Diacono, and then there's a Josh Hart who's outstanding.
Hart, and blank on the third guy's name. We went through his pronunciation during a break earlier, too.
Can I give you the Chicago flavor to it?
Yeah, Jalen Brunson.
Jalen Brunson.
Yeah, who didn't go to Illinois.
Who didn't go to Illinois, whose father was involved in a scandal off the court where he was proven innocent with a...
Former Bull,
bounced his way around the NBA, Rick Brunson. Jalen Brunson wanted to be an NBA player, right? Rick's like, you're not going to end up like me. You're not going to bounce around the league. If you're going to do it and you really want to do it, we're going to do it right. He took this kid and made his life miserable as far as just working him. He's a lefty. He had him tape his thumb on the right hand to his palm so you can properly shoot the jump shot, because the other hand, you know, your main dominant hand's doing the shooting, the other one's just a guider.
Yeah.
But some people get that hand too involved. He had him tape the thumb. Now he's a freshman looking like an NBA player to me. That's a nice Chicago angle to the Villanova story.
He's not a freshman, is he?
Jalen Brunson?
Yeah, he is.
Am I wrong about that?
I feel like he's been a...
Maybe I'm wrong. I could be wrong. I don't think I am, though. News at 5 o'clock. John McEnroe at 5:30, 720 WGN. It was so good yesterday. We're going back to back. Little dance, little shindig.
Buried headlines. Time to get to some of the stories we otherwise haven't had a chance to talk about yet, and some fun things going around the sports world. This one is certainly a twist. I mentioned it when we had Joey Meyer on in the last hour that Kevin Stallings left Vanderbilt for Pittsburgh. There's a player on Pitt. His name is Sheldon Jeter.
Yes.
Sheldon Jeter played at Vanderbilt his freshman year and transferred out, wanted to transfer to Pitt to be closer to home. He's from Beaver Falls, Pennsylvania.
Reasonable request for a young man. Sometimes people get homesick.
Well, Kevin Stallings, who was his coach at Vanderbilt, blocked his transfer to Pitt. Wouldn't let him do it. Now, this is something that sometimes happens when you try to transfer within a conference. Bo Ryan did this to Jared Utoff when he wanted to transfer to Iowa. And what happens is if they don't approve your transfer, you have to either pay for your education for a year. Basically, you can't get a scholarship right away. So, Sheldon Jeter is forced to go to a junior college for a year before he can play at Pitt. So now he plays at Pitt, Sheldon Jeter.
Who's the coach at Pitt?
And his new head coach is Kevin Stallings. Awkward.
That's unbelievable. Can I get a ding? Yay! So, breaking news. This just happened. We have an outstanding employee here at WGN. We like to call him...
I'm married. Doesn't matter. You do that for me? Really? Yeah, I'd like that.
Who's talking to?
It's Jake from State Farm.
That's
sounds
right.
Like a really good deal.
Jake from State Farm at 3 in the morning? Who is this?
It's Jake from State Farm.
What are you wearing, Jake from State Farm?
Khakis.
Jake from State Farm.
That was a long way of saying that we call him Jake from State Farm.
We have a Jake. We've turned him into Jake from State Farm, and he really is Jake from State Farm. Well, Jake from State Farm, being the great Jake from State Farm that he is, he came down to the studio a little while ago. He said, hey, can I get you anything from Walgreens? I said, you know, can you get me a Kind bar? And I said, and he said, absolutely. I said, here, let me give you $10. Head on over to Walgreens. I said, get yourself a pack of gum if you like, whatever you need. Jake from State Farm comes back, brings me my Kind bar. And I just checked for my change, and I got $6 back on my 10. Kind bars are $2. I got
how do you know they're $2?
Because I buy Kind bars all the time. It's certainly not $4, like you dancing outside of the music. Very cool.
Are you saying that Jake from State Farm...
Jake from State Farm has stolen from me, and I'm going to be going to Human Resources and filing a complaint against Jake from State Farm.
Jesus.
I mean, at that point, if you're going to, why not just take the whole 10? Just be like, I forgot. No change for
you. I think you should just be grateful that he went over to Walgreens and got you one.
No, Jake from State Farm is the greatest. I just want to, really, the only bringing this up is because it's a young man that's working hard in the business. He's going to be a superstar, and there's a reason to give him some attention. I'll pay $4 for a Kind bar any day of the week, and I hope he got him the best gum that he's ever had.
This is Jake from State Farm.
So, there's a couple coaches out there in the college football world that are having some fun with the Easter Bunny. There was a video that surfaced yesterday of James Franklin, the head coach at Penn State, completely taking out a bunny pinata full of candy for a bunch of kids. So, instead of having the kids just like whack it until the candy started coming out, he just tackled it and destroyed it. And candy went flying everywhere and the kids went crazy and they got all their candy. Cool. The Houston Cougars, you know that drill that football teams will do where they like create a circle and then they'll put two guys in the middle and basically they just go at each other until one takes the other one down? It's basically wrestling.
Sounds like football, yes.
So there's a video from a Houston football spring practice where they did this, but the two players are dressed as Easter Bunnies. Full head-to-toe Easter Bunny suits.
Not the spirit of Easter to me.
And they just go at each other until one takes the other one down.
Hashtag Houston Cougars. Remember Tonya Harding?
Oh, yeah.
Outstanding figure skater for a moment and then wasn't. Had interesting things go on off the ice in the bedroom. Margot Robbie, who is a very, 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 very attractive Australian actress... She is actually going to be playing Tonya Harding. There's an upcoming film called I, Tonya. Now, there's no director. We don't know any cast members. But Margot Robbie, who is phenomenally hot, she's going to play Tonya Harding, who is not phenomenally hot. This is bad casting. I think the movie needs to be recreated. I have plenty of people that I could recommend to play this role. Margot Robbie would not be the one.
I love Margot Robbie, though.
Yeah, this is a downgrade for Margot. I mean, they're going to have to do a lot of makeup to get her to Tonya level. Is that rude? Am I wrong?
Not to Tonya.
I mean, Margot Robbie is ridiculously good looking. Tanya Harding is...
Didn't she just do that movie with Tina Fey?
I didn't see that.
Yeah, where I think they're in the Middle East or something.
I've been given a confirmation from Mike Jacobson that that indeed did happen.
So the Atlanta Hawks are on their way to Chicago, right?
Big game tomorrow.
Hopefully Jeff Teague got on the plane. I don't know if you saw this, but the Hawks were in Detroit last night. Jeff Teague scored 12 points. Bus left without him. Team bus left the arena without Jeff Teague. There's a photo of him standing there on his cell phone holding a hot and ready pizza from Little Caesars.
That's amazing.
It happens sometimes.
Tony Snell was the same thing. He missed the flight to Orlando. Had to get himself there. Haven't seen that guy on the court much at all. Except for last night when they were down 80 and with like 5 minutes to go, out came Tony Snell. They threw him an alley-oop, wide open, missed the dunk. Great moment in last night's Bulls loss to Orlando.
You're not a fan of Tony Snell.
Can't play basketball in the NBA. It's a bad look if you're trying to...
play in the NBA?
Yeah. That'll do it for Barrett Headlines, back-to-back version. We got some Blackhawks talk coming up for you next. Blackhawks and Vancouver tonight. Big win last night over the Calgary Flames. An MVP performance for one of the guys on the ice who we will give a little tribute to next. And don't forget, John McEnroe, one of the greatest of all time, great talker, will be with us at 5:35, 720 WGN.
Shaw from the high slot sends a tumbling puck wide of the net. Ordeo still doesn't have his stick. And now Roosevelt from the line fires. They score! It's Andrew Shaw redirecting the puck beside the Flame net in behind Ordeo. Ordeo never got his goal stick back.
We've lost a ton of ground here. Trying to get a win was the most important thing here. And we still got to be better. And we found a way to win, which was nice. Darrell's was very instrumental in the win, but I just think that scoreboard watching when you're in this position is not what we need to be. We got to get 2 points and take care of our own business.
2 points last night in Calgary. Hawks move to Vancouver tonight. Try to get two more, a little bit of a weekend Canadian sweep. Teams that are not going to the playoffs, teams the Hawks should be beating.
I've officially kicked it in to Blackhawks playoff hockey drive.
There is a moment where that just sort of hits, right?
Yeah, for us non-diehards.
I was told that you got up this morning and rewatched the Hawks game on the DVR.
I wouldn't say I rewatched it. I'd say I watched it.
I guess that's what I meant.
Yeah.
You watched, yeah, yeah.
I
didn't watch it live. You recorded it. You watched it this morning.
Yeah, I came home last night. I had done some solid laundry yesterday. Did not appropriately address the sheets on the bed situation. So I had like tons of clothes and sheets everywhere. So I had to go couch sleep because I was just too tired to deal with that. So then middle of the night, I woke up and I was just, anxiety ridden 4 a.m. type of look. So I put on the Blackhawks to catch up on the hockey. Lasted through the first period, went back to bed, then woke up like 3 hours later and watched the rest of the game. And
I'm very impressed.
I'm deciding that the rest of the way, I'm not missing a minute of Blackhawk hockey. I'm next leveling it every game. I'm all in.
I would just like to go on the record and say that I did not record the Bulls game and I did not ruin my morning by watching it.
I watched that
because I like to enjoy my Easter mornings.
Well,
I decided not to watch the Chicago Bowl.
See, I enjoy watching Bulls basketball, but this morning's viewing of the Orlando game after the Blackhawks was a little bit rough. You know who was awesome last night for the Hawks? Scott
Darrells.
Scott Darling.
As Coach Q called him.
He was dancing.
Darrells.
Dancing in net. 2-2.
He was very good.
It was an impressive Scott Darling. And two goals for Andrew Ladd. One on a giveaway and a very quick reacting Andrew Ladd with the short side whapper, as I like to call him. Is that a hockey term? Is that legal?
I've never heard that one.
Well, it was a nice job, a little turnover, and Andrew Ladd finding the back of the net, and then he got an empty netter as well. He's actually, empty netters are right time, right place, the whole thing. But two goals and assists. He's got 8 points in the 12 games now since coming over from Winnipeg last month. Not terrible, not over the top, but I think that the Blackhawks would have taken that, right? moving forward here than Andrew Ladd?
Yeah, yeah. Look, here's I love this sequence in the game. This is my favorite part of the game. And Mark Lazarus, who covers the team for covers the Hawks for the Sun-Times, summed it up perfectly in a tweet. Shaw, Andrew Shaw, takes a roughing penalty.
Yep.
Shaw creates a chance right out of the box.
Yep.
Shaw takes a slashing penalty.
Yep.
Shaw scores.
Yep. Second period. Second period was awesome.
Penalty, scoring chance, penalty. Stupid penalty, by the way, on that second one. Shaw scores. And then he asked, so Lazarus went to Jonathan Toews and asked him if this was the most Andrew Shaw sequence imaginable. And Jonathan Toews' response was, yeah, pretty much.
I mean, it was. He had tons of energy.
Classic Andrew Shaw.
When he went to the first, in the first penalty, when he went there, he was looking at the guy that he was tangling with, and he starts just swearing at him, saying, who are you? Like, he was just completely dismissing this, like, no man Calgary Flame. I'm Andrew Shaw. I'm a Stanley Cup champion. You're over there talking all this nonsense. Who are you?
Who are you?
It was great. And then he comes back out there and acts like a lunatic and goes right back to the box. And then he gets the redirection off of a Michael Roosevelt blue line slap shot.
Speaking of talking smack during a game, was it Gerald Henderson the other day who was at the free throw line? And he goes, here, I think he said it to DeAndre Jordan. He goes, here's how you make a free throw. And he shoots it and misses it.
Gerald Henderson? Oh, yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. That's funny.
That happened, right?
It did.
Okay,
it did.
I just want to make sure. Yeah, he's staying at the free throw line. I think it was to DeAndre Jordan.
Yeah, and no one by the Gerald Henderson's not the household name, but yes, he taunted DeAndre Jordan, but then he missed the free throw.
Yeah, but that's my point. Yeah. He's like, here's how you make a free throw, and he misses it. Classic. Look, Andrew Shaw, that's how he plays. You just got to kind of deal with it. Stupid penalty, scores.
Blackhawks can clinch a playoff spot by the way tonight with 1 point. One more point, and they are officially in the playoffs. But you don't want to be the wild card. Got to stay out of the wild card. 2 points ahead of Nashville. Don't want to be traveling to the West Coast to start the playoffs.
I'm not. Maybe this is a bad hockey take, but I'm not afraid of the West if I'm the Hawks.
Eddie Olczyk.
They have not played well against the Stars. If they end up. Well,
that's true.
So. You fall down to the wild card. You got to play the Kings. First of all, that'd be a great series. But yeah, I mean, it's not ideal to have to go to the West when you could just be in the Central against teams you're very familiar with. But still, I don't think it's the end of the world. Otherwise, you're playing the Blues in the first round. That's not easy. But a team you can obviously beat.
They beat them last year.
Beat them in the regular season. Beat them. You know what I miss, though? Speaking of tonight's matchup against the Canucks.
Yes.
I miss the Hawks playing the Canucks in the playoffs.
When it mattered and...
Oh my God, were those some fun playoff series.
Yeah, Vancouver is not all that right now. You've got... They're super young. They got 10 guys on their team under 23 years old, the Vancouver Canucks nowadays.
Do you remember... Speaking of talking smack, do you remember all the hate that you would hear, like, not just during the games, but in the... That was back when I was covering the team during the playoffs, and like the Sedin twins would be standing there just like talking smack about guys.
Well, they're still there. They're still around.
Right. But I mean, this was like a hostile.
Oh, yeah. No.
Kessler. It was. Right? Kessler was doing things that were just driving everyone crazy, which like he normally does.
Roberto Luongo.
Oh, man. I want to go back to those days.
I remember interviewing Luongo after one of the playoff games, or interviewing's a little bit strong. I was in the herd around him, and he was a very, very unhappy camper. But that was, you know what made that great? It was real hate. Real hate.
Those teams did not like each other.
Yeah, when you get into professional sports and it actually doesn't become about the money, it's actually pure dislike.
Like, Kings and Hawks has been good, too, but not to that level. I mean, you did have when Duncan Keith... Oh, who was it that he just totally slashed and took out a couple years ago? Got suspended in the middle of that playoff series. Not Duncan Keith's finest moment.
I forgot about...
But, I mean, other than that, there's not... The amount of hate in those series have not been to the level of those great Canucks-Hawks series.
I mean, the Canuck team that's coming in tonight, they've lost 7 in a row. They've been outscored 21-5 over those games. They're 0-6-1.
Got to get a win tonight. I said that to Troy Murray yesterday.
You do?
You got to... You got to get 2 points. Last night, you got to get 2 points tonight. No question.
Shut out, by the way, in four of those last five. Yes, I would assume, we'll double check, but I would assume that Scott Darling is in net once again tonight. The Blackhawks weekend on WGN-TV continues as we're talking them. The Blackhawks colliding once again with the Canucks in Vancouver. Hawks hockey tonight, 6:30 on WGN-TV Sports. John McEnroe, right after the 5:30 news on 720 WGN. WGN, pleased to be joined by one of the greatest players in the history of tennis. 7 Grand Slam titles, 3 at Wimbledon, 4 at the U.S. Open, 9 on the double side. John McEnroe with us. John, let's start here. Do you think that men should be paid more than women? Because apparently Novak Djokovic has that take, which I was kind of surprised to hear.
I think that we lost that one maybe decades ago. So as a father of 4 girls and 2 boys, I think it provides a tremendous opportunity and inspiration, quite honestly, for little girls to play the sport of tennis. I think that the playing field for girls is more level than any other sport by far. And I think we've come a longer way in society than most real jobs. You still hear about women getting paid 2/3 or 3/4 of what men paid. So I think the example that we're setting is a really good one. And whether or not we play longer than the women at this stage or whether or not the quality's better is irrelevant at this particular moment. Because I remember in the 90s that there was times when Serena was first coming up and Selys was around, Hingis, among others, that Capriati, that it seemed like the women's tennis was more electric and emotional than the men's. It has come around. The men, you know, we're looking at 3 of the 5 greatest players that ever lived, so it's a special time for men, but I think we got a lot more things to worry about than, you know, trying to fight about that.
You've always had, at least from a distance, from what I could tell, a pretty interesting relationship with Serena. I've seen you trying to mentor her. What's that like for you, talking to Serena? Is she open to, you know, your suggestions at different times?
I think she's open to hearing what I have to say. That doesn't mean she's going to, you know, do what I recommend. I think she's a very strong-willed person. She's an incredible player and I think in a lot of ways an incredible person. I mean, she's represented our sport incredibly well. She's the greatest female player I've ever seen. I know that there's a lot of young girls and boys out there that get on a tennis court trying to be like Serena Williams, and I think it's been difficult for her to try to break into, let's face it, this is a white man, white woman's game. It's too unaffordable for most kids, and that's one thing that I'd like to change. And hopefully with Serena's help down the road, we can open some more doors and raise some more money and allow more kids to play this sport, because I think it's a great sport. And when you see it played at the level of someone like Serena or Federer, Nadal, Djokovic, then it's pretty much fun to watch.
John McEnroe with us, one of the greatest in the history of the game. You're talking about raising money. I mean, you were just heavily involved with the B&B Parabas. You have the We Are Tennis Fan Academy. I think you raised $80,000 just a couple of weeks ago, John. You're getting kids out there playing. Apparently, you were a drill sergeant. I feel like that role kind of comes naturally to you.
You know, I don't have to stretch too much when I do my cameos. So, you know, when I got into Mr. D's with Adam Sandler, or Curb, when Larry David called me, it wasn't too big of a stretch. And this thing with BNP, which is a huge tennis sponsor, I mean, they sponsored Davis Cup, which has always meant a lot to me. And that tournament in Indian Wells has become one of the biggest events in the world. And they also sponsor an event at Madison Square Garden, which is very close to my heart, having gone there since I was 8 years old and used to play a big tournament there. So I think the idea of trying to do something different for tennis, because oftentimes the fans are very quiet and they're expected to act a certain way. And I know as a player at times fans can be the difference in a way emotionally between winning and losing, maybe even that extra 5-10%. That's what the advantage of playing at home is for the Bulls or sometimes the Knicks, not enough for the Knicks, but that's a whole other issue. But, you know, they can keep you going. And so I think this is just a way to try to promote the game and get people involved and interested, and hopefully it will make some type of impact.
John McEnroe will be at the UIC Pavilion April the 8th, 7 o'clock is the start time. It's yourself, Andre Agassi, Jim Courier, James Blake. And I've seen you play in these events, and it's an awesome time, and it's competitive, too. How's the body feeling right now, John? I mean, last time I saw you, you looked phenomenal out there. It didn't seem like it was a problem for you at all.
You know, I've stuck with it pretty consistently, and I think that helps me. But obviously you hit and have to play against someone like Blake, who's still one of the quickest guys that I've ever seen on a tennis court. And he can still move around, so that's a very tall order. Agassi was one of the greatest ball strikers, still is, that I've ever seen play the game. So that would be extremely difficult because I'm giving a lot of years up to both those guys, even more so to Blake. Courier also. But at least I've done pretty well. We've gone at it tooth and nail for the last 10, 15 years on the seniors tour, and it's been pretty even. So maybe I'll get, if the draw's made, a shot at Courier. I don't know what the matchups are yet. But any way you look at it, it's going to be a tall order for me to win a match, much less both matches. So I'm going to go in there, and hopefully the people that hopefully come out to see us play will get behind the old guy.
I think you've got Courier in round one, and you just talked about fan involvement. You got to be pretty skilled at getting the people on your side, John. They want to see you win as much as they love John, Jim too.
Well, that's what that I hope is 100% accurate. So, because that would definitely come in handy. I mean, Jim's had incredible success as well, but pull one for the gray hair, one more out for the old guy, and then, you know, slowly but surely you see these younger bucks taking over the seniors tour. And I think it's something that could be really good for tennis. I mean, obviously to me, Chicago should have a big event because it's one of our great cities, but it doesn't. There's not that many events at all in the States. We got our work cut out for us, and hopefully guys like Andre and Blake and Roddick and all these other guys will keep playing and keep the interest up, and then maybe we'll make a breakthrough. We got a good group of young kids coming up, and hopefully a couple of these guys will start winning some Grand Slams and getting the interest level up here in the States more.
No doubt. I'd love to see a tournament come back to Chicago. You mentioned BNP a second ago. The comments by Raymond Moore, and he stepped down, who was the CEO, the tournament director, about women being on their hands and knees. Does that hurt that tournament in your mind at all going forward, or not at all since he's resigned?
Well, I think that that tournament has got Larry Ellison behind it, who is, you know, one of the richest guys in the world, but maybe more importantly, he absolutely loves tennis, and he's just leaving no stone unturned to do whatever it takes. He wants it, because I know Larry fairly well. He wants it to have a Grand Slam. I mean, he's thinking really big. So I think it's too bad because Ray Moore did a lot of good things. He sort of made a bonehead statement. I'm surprised that with all, you know, he's been around a long time. He used to be the president of the ATP. He's been involved in the political side of tennis for a long time. So I was really surprised to hear him say those things. Me personally, there's a lot of people that be chomping at the bit to get his job. And Larry's going to continue to add on to it. He told me some of the things he wanted to do for next year. So I don't think it's going to, in the long run, hurt the tournament.
And one more question on the kids, John. If you got a parent out there whose son or daughter is starting to take to the game, what's your advice as how to get them going maybe more and introduce it more, but not to be the over-the-top lunatic parent who maybe at the end of the day might turn their son or daughter away from the sport?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it's gotten worse that I've seen. Excuse me, the parents have gotten worse than ever. They focus on one sport at such an early age. I just disagree with that. I think it'd be healthy to play basketball as a kid, to play soccer, to, God forbid, lead a normal life, to go to school. I see a lot of kids even, not a lot, but too many at my academy that are homeschooled. And I just disagree with that generally. I think that kids are pretty isolated on a tennis court as it is, and they need to have some semblance of normalcy. They need to grow up around people their age so they can experience life. That's what, in a way, school is all about, to have some life experiences, and there'll be plenty of time to mature on a tennis court. It takes a long time anyway, so I strongly advocate the idea of, God forbid, young kids going to college and experiencing that. You see players on the pro tour, they're peaking later than they ever have, maybe even into their 30s, so there's no big rush. So parents got to get a little perspective and try to get those dollar signs out of their eyes a little bit.
Yeah, and you don't have to chase the dollars when you're at college. You can, you know, it's expensive when you're 18, 17 years old trying to make it. I mean, you didn't start playing right till you were 8, 9 years old, which for some parents, they're like, hey, when they're out of the womb, we better get them hitting up on a ball or something.
The best thing I ever did was play other sports as a kid. To live in New York City, to go to school like the average Joe, to take the subway. And I was, people forget this, but I was ranked 21 in the world when and already been a Wimbledon semifinalist when I entered Stanford. And I only went 1 year. I won the NCAAs and turned pro. But I think that 1 year was one of the best decisions I ever made to go to college, to sort of experience what it was like there. To be on your own, really, for the first time. But also people, the other players were coming after me. I was the hunted a little bit, so that gave me good preparation. People were coming out, you know, other college kids from other colleges, you know, going crazy when we played. And so that was fun in a way. And that gave me time to sort of get myself ready, and that was really helpful to me. And oftentimes the kids don't get that, and the parents really don't get that. So I try to model my tennis academy after what I did and after what I was able to have when I grew up. I had some great teaching, I had some great mentors, and I had some great advice. And hopefully I can impart that and someone will listen, because most people don't. I got to be honest. The parents that I, even with some of the kids at my academy, they act like they know more about tennis than I do. And I'm like, okay, what can I say? You just move on and you try to just, you know, make an impact with whoever will listen. But it's amazing how much people think they know when they don't have a clue at all.
And your tennis academy, it's in Manhattan and Long Island and Westchester. Is that correct? 212-427-6?
Yeah, that's correct. The main one's just outside. It's under the bridge as you come into Manhattan. It's very accessible and close. It's a place that was run down when I was a kid. I used to play soccer matches there for school, and there's been a lot of money raised to try to help the facilities, not just tennis, but also soccer and baseball and other sports. And I think that just gives more kids an opportunity, not just the wealthy ones, which obviously it does help in some cases too much because they have the money and the access, but hopefully, which I want to do with my own academy, is to raise enough money so the kids that can't afford to play, the kids that we'd like to get out there on a court and give them an opportunity. Maybe some of the great athletes that are currently, you know, choosing football because they have a better football program at their high school, or basketball because there's a free basketball program at school, and the tennis one isn't very good at all. So this is like an uphill battle, I think, to me. I think that the sport is higher in the totem pole in Europe, for example. It's not as expensive, and that allows the better athletes to play there. That's why you see them, in my opinion, dominating right now.
Yeah, and I mean, I love the sport so much. I think it's a great, great, great sport to play, but also just builds so much character in you. Real fast, I know you got to go, John. Last one here. Maria Sharapova, benefit of the doubt or no? I saw you had a couple comments on it. Hey, if it's legal, take it. But it's hard to believe that she didn't know what she was doing along with her team.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to really say. Obviously, there's only one or a handful of people to know what's really happening, and that's her and her team. I feel like Maria is the sort of Rafael Nadal of the female game. I never saw a player play so competitively in such intensity and want it so bad. So she's one of the most competitive and successful people that I've ever seen. And it's unfortunate that this type of bonehead move was made. It just seems crazy. I don't know the details of it. I try to make light of it by suggesting, let's give her the benefit of the doubt. But if she comes back, just let's not suspend her as long as she promises not to grunt anymore. That would be reason enough to let her back and forgive her for this one, because I can't take too much more of the grunting.
John McEnroe, he'll be at the UIC Pavilion April the 8th, along with Andre Agassi, Jim Courier, James Blake. John, it's always a great time to get to talk to you. Appreciate you taking the time.
You got it, Mark. Take care.
John McEnroe with us here on 720 WGN. Seven-time Grand Slam champion. The height of tennis was when you would wake up, Mike Jacobson, you're shaking your head at me, non-tennis fan. You'd wake up on a Sunday morning, you'd go into the kitchen, you'd have the little TV, it'd be 8:30 in the morning, Wimbledon would be on, and there was Johnny Mac taking on Bjorn Borg or Jimmy Connors. Then you'd get a little Chris Everett and a Martina Navratilova on a Saturday, followed by the Sunday of the men's. There was nothing better. And it was a great point in life, sir. Any thoughts? Are you still in queue?
No.
You're just looking at me.
I'm just staring at you, just making you feel awkward. He's a legend, and he's great, and he's a great quote. He has fun. He makes funny cameos now in all these movies. It was a great interview.
You
were cheesing from ear to ear throughout the whole thing. So
I do like getting the opportunity to talk to a guy like McEnroe.
He's a legend.
He is. Some of that stuff as far as the hands and knees, if you missed Raymond Moore, this is a guy who's been around tennis for a long, long time, and he was the tournament director and CEO of the BNP Paribas, which is out in Palm Springs, and outside of the majors, Wimbledon, the French Open, the Australian, U.S. Open, the whole deal, this is maybe number 6, 7 biggest events on the tennis tour all season long. And, I mean, he comes out with the statement from the WTA. No, I think the WTA, you know, in my next life when I come back, I want to be someone in the WTA, the Women's Tennis Association, because they ride the coattails of the men. They don't make any decisions, and they are lucky. They are very, very lucky. If I was a lady player, I'd go down every night on my knees and thank God that Roger Federer and Rafa Nadal were born, because they've carried this sport. They really have. And now the mantle's being handed over to Djokovic and Murray and some others. Okay, I mean, that's just, it's amazing to me in this 2016 that anybody would say anything like that, let alone somebody who's a CEO and tournament director. You know that it's going to go everywhere in 5 seconds. Raymond Moore apologized, and the next day he resigned, because you can't have that guy in your tournament. And the other part of it, outside of the sexist remarks, he's just dead wrong. I think the casual tennis fan, which I would assume Mike Jacobson, you probably fall under that umbrella. I mean, the casual tennis fans, you'd probably rather watch Serena than Novak. Am I right about that?
Yeah, I would say so, if I had to choose.
Like, I'm going to give you tickets to see Serena play or Novak. Are you probably going to take Serena?
I would probably go Serena.
Right. I mean, I'd rather watch the men at the end of the day, but I like watching them both. When I go to the U.S. Open, I watch the women's matches, I watch the men's matches.
And that was not all what Raymond Moore said. I've got a little bit more of what he said about women tennis players, too, beyond the get down on your knee, that whole thing.
All right, we'll do that coming right on back here, and then I've got a life problem after 6 o'clock. 720 WGN. Thanks for having us on. Happy Easter to you. Get you an update from the NCAA tournament in the United Center, where Virginia is looking awful good early. No surprise there. Notre Dame and North Carolina coming up later tonight. Mike Jacobson will have the scores for you in the 6 o'clock news. Roger Battis will have that in a matter of moments. But real fast, one more comment from our great tournament director and CEO, Raymond Moore, about the women's game, which, you know, it's good to be good at tennis, but it's also to be really good looking.
But they have a handful of very attractive prospects that can assume the mantle. You know, Muguruza, Jeannie Bouchard, you could just go. They have a lot of very attractive players. And I mean, and the standard in ladies tennis has improved unbelievably. And if you go out...
Do you mean physically attractive or competitively attractive?
No, I don't. I mean both. Both. You know, they are physically attractive and competitively attractive. They can assume the mantle of leadership once Serena decides to stop. I think they have quite a few very, very attractive players.
And there you go. So Raymond Moore, who made comments earlier this week, he was the tournament director for a BNP Paribas. We, by the way, just had John McEnroe on, if you're just joining us, in a little bit of tennis talk here. I'm already getting hate on the text line. Only Carmen cares about tennis. Sir, that is not true. People care about tennis. And there are going to be a lot of people out at the UIC Pavilion to see John McEnroe play on April the 8th against Jim Courier, James Blake, and Andre Agassi, who, by the way, if you missed the interviews are up at WGNradio.com. But that was, so this guy Raymond Moore, who's now resigned, first he talked about women needing to be on their hands and knees, thanking the men for bringing popularity to the game. Meanwhile, by the way, the U.S. Open is played at the Billie Jean King Center. Billie Jean King is a woman and one of the most influential sports figures of the last 100 years. Neither here nor there, though. All right, quick timeout, and coming back after the 6 o'clock news, I have a very important question about how to handle a wedding. I need your help, and it could get emotional all at the same time. 312-591-7200. Thank you very much. 720 WGN. Tonight, 720 WGN. Final 20 minutes or so of the beat. Blackhawk hockey coming up at the bottom of the hour. Judd Surratt with pregame at 6:30. Blackhawks and Vancouver. Should be a win tonight, you would think. Vancouver is struggling mightily. The Blackhawks with a 4-1 win last night over Calgary, although a couple of those goals came late. It was actually tight throughout, 2-1 with a couple minutes to go. But hopefully the Blackhawks can get a win and solidify their playoff position a little bit further. And they can actually clinch a playoff spot tonight if they get a 1 point, but obviously hoping for a little bit more than that, stay out of that wild card position. We'll keep you up to date the rest of the 20 minutes on what's going on at the United Center. Virginia looks like they're going to advance. And, of course, later tonight, North Carolina and Notre Dame. And don't worry about the B situation in the Cubs game today. I'm sure that that'll work its way out just fine. Dexter Fowler had to leave early with a little side pull, but I'm sure he'll be okay. And Jake Arrieta has been cleared for opening day. So good news on the baseball front today. Now, I need your help. 312-981-7200 for the best suggestion here. I've got a $25 gift card to Lou Malnati's. A friend of mine is getting married. He got engaged. I got the text today. And congratulations. Should I talk? I'm going to leave names out of it.
Come on.
He's
a former employee.
You already said it earlier.
Okay.
Yeah, come on.
I heard it driving in.
Okay, so Jordan Burnfield, who used to work here, is a good friend of mine, is getting engaged. Now, Jordan met his wife-to-be courtesy of myself and my ex-girlfriend. And she really gets the credit for setting them up. I mean, I was there and I said, sure, but like, it wasn't like I had some grand plan. And now, you know, me and my ex are no longer, and they're getting married, and there's going to be a wedding. That's what happens when you get married. And now, like, most likely my ex is going to get an invitation with a plus one, and she's going to have somebody with her, and I'm going to be by myself. And it's just a nightmare. This is a nightmare scenario. So I'm wondering, 312-981-7200, do I have it within my rights to say that you can invite my ex, but she does not get a plus one? Can I just go for the non-plus one? Because a plus one, I don't know if I can handle a plus one.
Well, all of the invitations are going to be printed the same. You're going to have a plus one, too.
What am I going to do, take you?
I'm free. I'll bring a present. He'll make out like
okay.
a bandit.
I mean,
with us.
Sure. I'm not. Listen, I'll have a date to the wedding. I would think.
Yeah,
but
and
I mean, she doesn't live in she doesn't live in town anymore.
Well, how far away does she? Maybe she can't make it.
I just feel like at some point here, because this is going to be the happiest day of his life, and without me, it wouldn't be going on. I feel like I should have some say into who's coming to the wedding.
But you just said that she should probably have more say because she was the one that really helped set them up. It's one or the other here, Carm.
Yeah.
It's going to be a growth thing for me here. I'm going to have to grow, and I'm already getting crushed on the text line. Man up.
Yep.
You need, just look at how easy that just flew out of bed. It's just, yep. 312-981.
You got to do
There's
it.
Got, there, okay.
And just whoever you bring
yeah.
of the female persuasion.
Yeah.
Just make sure that it's, you know,
put a ring on her finger.
No, Sports Illustrated quality.
Ah. 312-981-7200. Do I have any rights here? Let's see here. Somebody is offering. I'm getting to know you have no say. People are telling me to bring a professional with me that looks really attractive. I'm not bringing adult entertainment to this wedding. That would be that. I mean, I know the family too well. Can't be doing that. I think my emotion should be taken into consideration in this wedding, Badish. I don't care what you say. 312-981-7200. Diane is in Burbank now on 720 WGN. Diane, what do you got?
Man up. Deal with it. Part of life.
All true, right, Diane?
You got it.
Have you ever been in this scenario yourself?
No, I have not.
Okay, so that's it, huh? Man up. You know, I don't think it should be on gender lines here. I think it's man and woman up. I think it's grow up. Be a professional.
Yes, it has.
Right?
Yes, it has.
Okay. Diane, thank you so much. I appreciate you.
And
I think
you two have a great night.
All right. I think bye-bye. Happy Easter. I think that her sentiments are shared by many. Elise in Buffalo Grove, 312-981-7200. What's your advice, Elise?
Well, my son and daughter-in-law just got married 3 years ago, and unless people were with significant others, they didn't invite plus ones. And even though he's a very good friend of yours, you want to go and support him. Are you going to be standing up in the wedding?
I don't think so.
Okay. Well, maybe you'll be invited with a plus one. And how soon are they getting married?
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that either. This is all. I just got the text. And then the thank you for you and your ex for setting us up. And that's when I put my phone down and thought, I'm going to bring this to the radio to get some resolution here.
You know what? You would just go and have a good time. That's the way to do it.
Okay.
He's your friend, and you're going there for him, not for your ex-girlfriend.
Okay. Thank you, Elise.
All right.
Yes,
all right.
I hear you. I don't know if I can put that into actual action, but I hear what you're saying. 312-981-7200. Peter is in Wrigleyville. Peter, what's your advice here?
Hello.
Hello, Peter.
Hi there. Actually, it's not just advice. I've gone through the same thing, and technology today and social media. My ex became friends with all my friends on Facebook, and we share about 48 friends, and I would say 45 of them are mine. And I'm wondering myself, and I'm curious what other people have to say, how do I start telling friends that, you know, I'm your friend for all these years, and I'm kind of in your place going to this wedding. I'm feeling awkward every day because she's still in everyone's life, and I don't want her to be honest.
Right.
I want to each go on with her.
Well, and Peter, you bring up a great situation because social media has changed the game. Now, number one, have you muted her? Have you defriended her?
I didn't defriend her, but I now I don't see any of her. Well, I don't know what I pushed on these. I'm not good at this stuff. But she's still a friend. But I no longer see any of her stuff.
Okay. So you muted her. Well, I think, Peter, since you're calling in and this is this much on your heart, I think you need to defriend. I think we got to make the move. And I'm not sure if that actually will. Are you holding out hope that you'll get back together with her?
No, I'm okay with being separate. But I guess what's uncomfortable is she's grasped on to all my friends.
No. Do you think she's doing that to get your attention?
You know, I don't know that, but. We both have moved on. We lived together for a while, but I don't know. That's a good question.
My guess is that she's doing that to hold on to you in some way, shape, or form. She might not be completely clear about getting back together here. Peter, since you shared so vulnerably today on the beat in 720 WGN, hold on. I'm going to give you some Lou Malnati's pizza, all right?
Oh, great. Thanks.
There you go, Peter. Peter, I feel your pain. 312-981-7200. Carol's in Brookfield on 720 WGN. Go ahead.
Oh, hi. How are you?
I'm great, Carol. I think moderately. I'm mostly okay. Go ahead.
Don't worry about a thing. Just smile and just be cordial. The other party has the right to invite who they want. So don't worry about a thing. You're going to be gorgeous. Just smile and don't even pay attention to anything.
Carol, it's a beautiful theory, what you just threw out there. I don't know how realistic it is. That I'm going to be beautiful. B, that I can just smile and see that any of that's going to work, as that people will believe that I'm not just sitting there in some random form of uncomfortableness. But I do like...
Well,
yes?
You know, if you have a lovely date to go with, take her. It doesn't matter. If you're not going out with her, don't worry about it. Just go and be cordial to your friend that you set them up with.
Thank you, Carol. This is universal. This is the universal take on this one. Just go, have fun, One of my favorite texts coming in from the 815. Suck it up, Buttercup. There you go. This week, kick back, relax, and enjoy great food from the comfort of your own home. Chicago's Best Takeout. Chicago's Best, Sunday night at 10 on WGN-TV. Quick timeout. I will take a couple more calls on this as we wrap up the show. And I need somebody to come with me and say that I can throw down the gauntlet. No. No plus one. Get her out of there. 720 WGN. WGN. My friend Jordan Burnfield's getting married. My ex-girlfriend set him up. She's going to be there with, I'm guessing by this time, her fiancé-to-be. I'm wondering if I can block her from the wedding. 312-981-7200. Is that wrong? I got a great text here. One saying, same table. Like, maybe we're just all going to be at the same table hanging out. Right, Badish?
Perfect. Oh, well, yeah. Because you're at the same level of friendship with Burnfield. You understand?
Yeah.
They put the people so that you're not, like, sitting at a table with people you don't know.
Yeah.
So they put you at a table with people that you know, that you're fairly acquainted with.
Mm.
Yeah, so you're screwed there.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm going to know a lot of people at this wedding, I would think.
No.
Maybe Mike Jacobson might be invited to this wedding. You think you get an invite? Are you on that list?
I don't know. It's a possibility.
I think you might be in there.
Maybe I could be your plus one.
Yeah, it's not going to happen.
Well, I don't think so.
312-981-7200. Pat, Lake Geneva, you're on 720 WGN.
Yeah, I think you got to, like Dan Meredith, God rest his soul, used to say, and that girl, you got to turn out the lights because the party's over. Think about the wedding, because the wedding is probably going to have some very, very attractive young ladies. And if she sees you hitting on one of them, she may be a little jealous. And plus, you never know. You might walk into something that much better than what was before.
Pat, love you. Appreciate you. That thought has been recurring on the text line. There'll be women there. You'll be able to flirt with them. Does anybody know who they're dealing with here? You think I'm picking up a girl at the wedding?
I think the more important question is,
yes,
that by the time the wedding comes around, could be a 9 months to another year, you need to have somebody.
Well, that's a good point. 720 WGN Blackhawk Hockey coming right up.